Hi, and welcome to Revision Media. Here with me, Paul Stevenson. This is Monday, the 19th of April, 2021. Hope you're all well, and welcome to the show live here in London for the next hour. That's 4 p.m. till, well, just after 4 p.m. now, till 5 p.m. I will be on Republic Broadcasting Network later today at midday Central Time on Beyond the Official Narrative with Richard Carey. Next Monday, we will be live there with E. Michael Jones. That's the 26th, live on Republic Broadcasting Network with E. Michael Jones. So do tune in for that. It's always great to interview Mike. So anything else I need to get out of the way? I think that's pretty much it. We had a really good roundtable on Saturday on Republic Broadcasting Network as well. And we might be doing that again in the future. Tune in there. It's the Farhan Shouf show that Richard Carey is filling in for him for the couple of weeks, I believe. I'm going to play an interview with a couple of guys I like a lot when it comes to the economy and giving us the reality of the economy. Rather than the lies and propaganda and absolute nonsense that you get out of mainstream media, who seem to think that, you know, inflating bubbles is somehow, a way of running an economy and a healthy economy, which is obviously nonsense. So the Federal Reserve is basically printing money like it's going out of fashion. You know, the ECB and the Bank of England aren't far behind them. So there's a gentleman called Neil McCoy Ward I quite like. And obviously, I think Peter Schiff is very, very good at simplifying things. And he's a good teacher, Peter Schiff, I think. I've learned a lot from the guy. And he does break things down well. So he's been interviewed by Neil McCoy Ward. So you've got a couple of guys there that I like a lot and listen to. They've actually got together. So it's interesting, isn't it? Sort of like minds, they sort of gravitate together. So this is Neil McCoy Ward and his channel interviewing economist and he has a YouTube channel and a radio show as well, Peter Schiff.
And just to really dive straight in, I wanted to ask you how you really see the next 12 months to 3 years, you know, playing out in the USA, especially when we have an end to all these programs. So at the moment, you've seen the madness of a lot of the programs. We have the unemployment where people are on $300 a week. A lot of people, they simply just don't want to return to work at the moment. There's a lot of difficulties in recruiting. We have the forbearance, mortgage forbearance. A lot of people even taking forbearance when they don't need to take forbearance. We have the rent moratoriums. We have all of these sort of programs going on. What do you foresee happening at the end of one of these, you know, come to an end, these programs? And also then we'll transition into how you see the next 12 months to 3 years going with the economy.
Well, I mean, first of all, it's hard to know exactly how long we can get away with this. I mean, we're going to try to get away with it as long as we can. At least that's what the government's going to be doing. And so the reality is, though, the United States had a very weak economy before COVID. That's why it was so susceptible to COVID, and in particular to the way the government went about, you know, restricting the economy in the aftermath of COVID. But the U.S. economy is in even worse shape post-COVID. Based not just on COVID, but on the government response. All the spending, all the debt, all the money printing has made a weak economy weaker. But the way a lot of people look at an economy, they don't understand the inherent weakness because they see all this money being spent and they assume that, oh, we must have a strong economy because look, we're spending all this money. But strong economies are not defined by consumer spending. It's defined by the production of goods and services, right? A strong economy is one that is able to turn out more output, right? It can produce more goods and services for consumers to buy. That's not what we're doing. And in fact, if you look at our trade deficits, our merchandise trade deficits, they've gone off the chart. We've never had deficits this size. And that's because the economy is too weak to produce the stuff that we're consuming. And the way that Americans are getting their money is not because they're earning it, but they're just getting checks from the government. And the government just prints the money. They don't produce anything. They just print money and give it to Americans. And Americans are spending it. Also, because money is so cheap, there's speculative manias everywhere. I mean, there was already bubbles, and now the bubbles have just gotten even larger. So you have an economy defined by excess consumption, financial bubbles, all made possible by the Fed. But the only thing that is enabling the Fed is the willingness of the world to hold on to U.S. dollars and dollar-denominated investments. And that's the key, because the party is going to end when the dollar cracks. When people decide, and institutions around the world, we don't want any more of this paper. We're not going to keep sending our stuff, our manufactured goods, our resources to the United States to keep its economy going in exchange for pieces of paper that you're just, you know, printing, and that you're going to continue to print in greater and greater quantities. And so that's what's going to bring an end to it. So the question is, how much longer? And that I don't know. I mean, will it happen in the next year? Will it take 2 or 3 years before the dollar crashes? I don't know. But I do expect the dollar to gradually decline relative to other currencies up until the point where it crashes. I do expect foreign markets to outperform domestic markets. And investments that are particularly sensitive to inflation to be among the best performers, which would be resources, you know, the mining stocks, industrial metals, agriculture, raw materials. And I would expect the emerging markets to begin to outperform the developed markets, in that I think those economies will benefit more from a weak dollar. And I think on a relative valuation basis, stocks in the emerging world, to me, look a lot cheaper than the stocks in the developed world.
A lot of my subscribers are going to be really happy, and my clients, with what you just said, because those are exactly what I've been recommending that they get into. And a lot of it, I don't know, you know, much about Maslow's hierarchy of needs and all the different models, but I've been saying to my clients, you really need to be getting in. Stop looking at all the middle tiers of Maslow and start looking at the fundamental human needs of what people are going to need as we come into this crisis. But don't just focus there, which of course is agriculture and the metals and the mining and all the other things, and energy as well. Don't just focus there, but also look at this K-shape that we're having. It's crazy. I was talking about this last week. I was in the Rolex shop last week, and I was speaking to the manager there here at the it's in the Wynn here in Las Vegas, and I was speaking to the manager, and he said, we're just shocked. Even head office is so shocked. We've sold out of all of our watches. Next door sold out. And I said, why are you guys so shocked by this? Obviously, with the rich getting richer and richer, and they're looking to park their money, surely you must have known they were all going to come in and buy a lot of assets here. So I'm glad you've said that. I'm going to come back to one of the points that you mentioned in another question, actually, because I just want to touch upon that a little bit more. So I was listening to some economists, which will probably make you laugh, over the last couple of weeks, and they're saying, we're experiencing now, this on the MSM mainstream media, this new era, this new economic boom era. And I'm waiting for the interviewer to say, can you explain where this money is coming from? They never do. So obviously, I'm assuming you agree with me, this is just a fake boom right now.
Well, of course, it's not a boom at all. I mean, if all we had to do is print money and that would create a boom, why wait for a pandemic? I mean, just print it all the time, right? Why do we have to wait for a disaster to have an economic boom if booms are simply the consequence of government printing money and spending money? And if that worked, I mean, why didn't it work in all these other countries? that have done it. Look at all the other countries that have printed even more money. They didn't have booms. You know, they had hyperinflation.
Yeah.
So everybody is confusing inflation for economic growth. But again, the only reason that it looks possible is because the U.S. dollar is the reserve currency. We're able to get away with it. We're able to print money, and the rest of the world is producing this stuff that we're not producing, and they're willing to exchange their real goods for our paper. But they only do that to the extent that they're confident that that paper is going to have value in the future, so that then when they want to buy something, they can do it. But when you start to look at what we're doing, and the idea that, wait a minute, we're never going to balance our budget again. In fact, we're now convinced we don't even need to ever balance it. The government right now is, I think, borrowing $3.50 for every $1 it collects in taxes. I mean, 70% of what the government is spending is borrowed and printed. And we now believe that we can have whatever we want and not have to pay for it. And we have a huge laundry list of socialist programs that are queued up to be enacted. And when our trading partners think about this and like, hey, the U.S. national debt is now $28 trillion. Next year it'll be 30-something trillion, 40 trillion, 50 trillion, 100 trillion, right? The balance sheet, the Fed's balance sheet is now almost 8 trillion. It's going to go to 10 trillion this year, maybe more, 15, 20 trillion. At what point, you know, does this whole thing implode? And when people start to factor that in, they're not going to wait for the collapse. They're going to want to get out before. So once they actually can read the writing on the wall and see where we're headed, that there's no more fiscal discipline at all, that we're just going to print the dollar until it crashes, well, it's going to crash a lot sooner. Because now the people who can figure this out are going to want to get out of the dollar, and at some point the bottom drops out. But I wanted to mention your point about the Rolexes, because I did notice this. I mean, I look online, and you could see the prices of, because I recently had bought another Rolex a couple years ago, and I bought it new, and the used ones are a lot more than what I paid for a brand new gold Rolex from Rolex. I can't even find them, and just finding used ones are more than I paid for a new one. And I think part of the problem for them is that there was a big drop in production due to COVID. A lot of companies have had this situation where they haven't been able to produce as much product because a lot of their workers weren't at work, and there were bottlenecks in the supply chain. Meanwhile, the correct monetary policy for all central banks was to shrink money supply, because when you're producing less stuff, you need to print less money. But we did the opposite. We were producing less stuff, and everybody, all the central banks were printing more money. So more money to buy stuff, but less stuff to buy. So prices can only go up, but it's not just Rolex watches. Prices are going up for everything. I mean, look around. The central banks are telling us, particularly the Fed, don't worry about it. It's transitory. How the hell do they know that it's transitory, and why should it be transitory? But these are the same guys that told us not to worry about subprime in 2005 and 2006 because they said it was contained. Well, yeah, they were wrong. It wasn't contained.
I've got a question for you on that.
They're wrong about inflation. It's not transitory.
Let me ask you about that, because, you know, I've obviously studied this in depth and looked at a lot of the models around it, looked at the debt levels and the ratios. So I do want to get deeper on this with you on this point of that you don't see it as transitory, because what was it, over the last year, $8 trillion has been created. And I've got a couple of theories on how I see it over the next couple of years and how I see it tapering. But if we look at it not on a monetary amount, so that's what I'm hearing you talk about, the $8 trillion, and what, we're almost a 400% total debt to GDP ratio right now. So that's total debt for anyone watching and getting confused with other debts. But if we look back to, say, 2007, where they printed $5 trillion, and they had a, what, 380% total debt to GDP ratio. And then they sort of tapered down the QE a little bit there. So I think maybe, you know, if we've seen $8 trillion this year, maybe it could be $5 or $6 trillion next year, maybe $2 or $3 trillion the year after. To me, in my mind, that would say transitory inflation, because what we've seen, people who have followed me for a year now would have seen my videos last March, April, where I said a year from now, all of this QE or this new printing is going to hit us. And actually, it is hitting us right now. I'll come on to this in another question, Peter, in terms of the wholesale price index and the producer's price index and what we're seeing with the crazy CPI low numbers. But that's the way I'm looking at it, purely from this data point of view and seeing it taper like it did 07, 08, 09 coming down. What are you seeing that's saying it's not going to be transitory?
Well, first of all, I think that the reason that we didn't get a bigger and a more sustained increase in consumer prices following the monetary policies in the aftermath of the 08 financial crisis, right? We did QE 1, 2, and 3, and we didn't see a big increase in consumer prices. One reason was the nature of that crisis helped to contain consumer prices at early on, because remember, we had a big run-up in prices leading into the financial crisis. Oil got up to $150 a barrel. The dollar was at an all-time record low. So when the crisis began, we had a big drop in commodity prices. We had a big rise in the dollar. And a lot of that helped to keep some of the forces that would normally be pushing prices higher at bay. Now, prices did go up. They didn't go down. And I think they went up by more than the CPI revealed, because I think the CPI does not do a good job by design of capturing the real degree to which the cost of living is going up. So we actually had a bigger increase in the cost of living than the government reports. But a lot of it was a function of America's trade deficits and the fact that we were able to export a lot of our inflation. And a lot of that money then ended up going into financial assets. So where you saw the manifestation of that inflation was in record stock prices, record bond prices, real estate prices rebounded. So you saw a lot of financial assets responding to the monetary inflation. And so that took some of the pressure off maybe the consumer goods. But I think this time around, the inflation is going to be more concentrated in commodities and consumer prices than it was in the past, in the last cycle. But I also think that if you look at where we're starting this time, the dollar was relatively high. Instead of the dollar starting at a record low, we've started after a protracted dollar bull market. So I think the dollar is just beginning the next leg down in its long-term bear market. Gold, on the other hand, I think is getting ready for the next leg of its bull market. So we're going to see a falling dollar, rising gold prices, other commodity prices rising. All that is going to bleed into producer prices, consumer prices. And I still think that we have a lot of inflation that is yet to manifest because of the lag. You know, a lot of times there's a lag between printing a lot of money and the effect that it has on prices. So I think we're catching up to the money that we printed, after the financial crisis. We're not even factoring in really all the money we're printing now, which is off the charts, because a lot of people who are looking backward and saying, hey, we had big deficits following the financial crisis, we printed a lot of money, and look, we didn't have any inflation. So this proves that we can run as big a deficit as we want, we can print as much money as we want, and we're never going to have inflation. I mean, that's wrong. I mean, first of all, printing money, that is inflation by definition. But to say that we can create all this inflation, but that prices are not going to rise, is ridiculous. Because if that were true, if you could print money and goods would just magically appear, so that people could buy stuff with that money. Well, then just give everybody $1 million,
right,
and everybody could drive fancy sports cars and live in big houses and take, you know. But of course, that's not how it works. If you just print money, prices have to go up, because all money does is allocate the goods that have been produced. It doesn't create more production. The only thing that can lower prices is more supply. If you don't change the supply and you just increase the demand with money, prices go up. But what's actually happening now, as I mentioned a bit earlier, we've got more demand because we're printing more money, and we have less supply because we're producing less, fewer goods, especially in America, where you have so many Americans who are not even working anymore. So they don't help produce goods or provide services. They just sit at home waiting for their stimulus money to arrive, and then they spend it by shopping online. So it's pure demand without any contribution to supply.
Yeah, I think it's as your friend Elon Musk says, to all the fools out there, if you don't produce stuff, there is no stuff. So, yeah, I'm going to jump into the next part then, and that is, because there's so many things that we can just interject here. It's just great so far. I want to talk a little bit on inflation, and then let me see if I can link this to your forecast and what you just said about the gold, because there's a couple of things I want to touch on there. So in terms of the CPI, which I believe is manipulated, I guess you believe there's some manipulation there again. We've just seen a 0.6% rise in March, or 2.6% year on year. I think this is nonsense, personally, because of all the swaps they do. They swap out products that are rising, they put lower products in, and things like that. But the key thing here that I want to touch upon is from my forecast last year, which is the inflation rate right now and the CPI should be way higher than it is. And I think the reason it's not is because of that manipulation. But here's an example. If you look at the PPI, the producer price index, it's up 4.2% year on year. The WPI, so the wholesale price index, up 7.4% year on year. And yet, where is the inflation from all of this? This is what doesn't make any sense.
We just got the numbers a couple days ago on import and export prices. And our import prices are up something like 7% year over year. And our export prices were up 9%. So the stuff that we're producing for export is 9% more expensive than the stuff we produced a year ago.
Yeah.
So prices, the costs of production are going way up. And I don't necessarily know how much the CPI is manipulated. I just think it's been designed in such a way that a lot of the price increases end up getting smoothed out of the computation. So this was by design. This is what they do. You know, I often talk about it because I haven't done this in a while. But back in 2013, I did a video, which you can see on my YouTube channel, in which I looked at the CPI from 2003 to 2013, and there was a 10-year period. And, you know, I didn't think it was accurate. So I one of the things I looked at was newspapers and magazines. And according to the CPI, during the 10-year period from 2003 to 2013, the price of newspapers and magazines was up by 30%. Well, I decided to see for myself. So I went to 2003, and I looked at the price online of 20, I think, about of the leading newspapers and magazines by circulation, Time, Newsweek, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, LA Times, all these big, Sports Illustrated, I forget, but I took a bunch of magazines and I just looked at the price on the cover in 2003 and I looked at the price in 2013 and I just took an average and I got an increase of about 130% in the price of those magazines. But the CPI said they only went up 30%. So how do you put in 130% and 30% comes out the other end? That's the magic of the CPI. Right. So, and I'm assuming that the same is true with a lot of other prices. The prices are going up, but the government claims they're not, or they're going up by less. So, and this is by design, because the government doesn't want to be honest with the public about how much inflation there is. Mm-hmm. If they're honest, then A, they have to, you know, they have to give bigger increases to spending that's attached, you know, that has a CPI component. But more importantly, the way the Fed justifies keeping interest rates low is by claiming we don't have enough inflation. So they have to keep pretending that we don't have inflation, so they have a justification for deliberately pursuing policies to give us more inflation. So on the one hand, they lie about inflation and say it's lower than it is, and then they complain that we don't have enough inflation, and they demand that the Fed do something to create the inflation that the government is actually covering up, you know, with their fraud. But all of this is designed to perpetuate this bubble, to keep it going as long as possible. But I think we've now gone so far beyond the point where we can continue to do this. The inflation rate is likely to be so high in 2021. I mean, I think the actual increase in the cost of living will rise in double digits this year, you know, somewhere above 10%. And it's going to be very high. And a lot of that is going to be in the CPI. I mean, the CPI could easily end up being more than 5% for 2021. But if it's 5%, that means it's probably 15% in the real world. For if sure. It's 5% in the fantasy world of CPI. But I think that even if we end up with 5% official inflation for 2021, at the end of this year, the Federal Reserve is still going to be at zero. They will not have raised interest rates. Now, maybe they're still going to pretend that it's transitory, and they're not going to do anything until it gets to 10% on the CPI, which means it's probably 20 or 30%. But of course, if you wait that long, I mean, you're so far behind the curve, you're never going to catch up. Yeah. Once you let inflation get that bad, you can't stop it. I mean, because in order to stop the inflation rate now, the Fed would probably have to move rates up maybe to 4 or 5%, which it can't do. I mean, it couldn't even get them to 2.5% without collapsing everything in 2018. And the bubble is much bigger now than it was then. So I don't even think we could survive 1%. But if they had to go to 5%, I mean, everything would just implode. So how are they going to wait a year or two when they have to go to 10 or 20% interest rates to put the inflation genie back in the bottle? So what people have to understand is that the United States is running a deliberate policy of inflation. We're just going to keep creating inflation and keep lying that we don't have enough of it or that it's transitory or keep pretending that we have a way to put a stop to it if it's ever too high. But we are repudiating our debts through inflation. And we are basically, the politicians are meeting all of their promises through inflation. Sure. And they're avoiding having to admit that we can't pay, because the alternative to inflating is defaulting. And there's no way the politicians are going to default. I mean, they don't want to default on the Treasury bonds. But more importantly, they don't want to default on Social Security. They don't want to default on Medicare. They don't want to default on all those promises that got them elected. And so the only way not to default is to inflate. But all that does is makes the money worthless.
Sure. All right. Two or three points I want to jump back in with before we get too far away from it. So a couple of points of evidence to some of the things you said. One of my clients last week I was speaking to, he imports safes, so gun safes and things like that, into the US, big, big, big company. And he said what's happening was last year or the year before, he was paying $5,000 for a shipping container coming in. He's now paying $16,000 for a shipping container going in. Another one of my clients works in that industry. He said the containers are coming in full and we're sending them back empty. So it ties in with what you're saying about exporting the inflation, the paper dollars, the fiat currency, out to other countries. How long does that go on for? Well, that's a question for another day, I think. But I also wanted to touch on another point, and Lynette Zhang's going to be really upset with me for saying this. But last week, my wife and I were going through a drive-through, some fast food. She hates it when I say this. And I got two tacos. My wife got a burrito. And, you know, tacos, you know, 99 cents, something like that. And the last time I bought some, $1.39 per each one. So that's a 40% increase in the price. Her burrito was not $3.79 or whatever it was. It was $5.79 or $5.89. Again, you're seeing this huge increase. So all these people saying, I'm not seeing these price increases now. I'm not seeing them. Go to the store. Just walk around. How can you not see these increases? How can you not see increases in used cars? It is all around us.
Oh, the used car prices are ballistic. They're up like 30% year over year, something like that.
Yeah.
But look, first of all, what we're seeing in trade is a glaring evidence of the underlying weakness of the U.S. economy. You know, the economies that are strong are the ones that are filling up all those containers with stuff. They're the economies that produce the stuff. The fact that we're shipping back empty containers shows you how weak our economy is. We've got nothing to put in there. And that's one of the reasons that the containers are so expensive now, is because if you ship a container to the United States, not only is it the cost of shipping it to the U.S., but now you have to pay the cost of bringing it back, because there's not a U.S. exporter that's going to cover that cost, because we're not exporting. So you as the person who's selling containers to the U.S., you've got to pay to bring that container back empty so that you can fill it up again.
Mm-hmm.
But so the cost of shipping stuff to America is going way up, and the cost of producing the stuff is going way up too, you know, because you have a lot less production. I mean, look at what you just said with the fast food. I mean, costs of preparing fast food, obviously food prices, look at a chart, look at corn, look at wheat, look at soybeans, look at all the ingredients that go into making that food are going way up. Energy costs are going way up, right? The cost of cooking the food. But what about the labor? I mean, minimum wage keeps going up, 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 up. But not just that, a lot of the restaurants can't even get workers because they have a much better deal from the government to stay at home and not work. So now the restaurants that are opened up, they have to pay a premium to get people to give up their unemployment benefits and come to work. Plus, you have a lot of these restaurants where they're on 50% capacity, so they don't even have as many diners to spread out their fixed cost over, right? You have restaurants that are half empty, and so they have higher pay, they can't do as much volume, so they have to make up for it with rising prices. I mean, prices are just going to go through the roof. I mean, nothing could be more obvious. We are just getting started, right? They're looking at these big jumps in prices and thinking that this is just transitory. Yeah, we're transitioning to extremely high inflation. That's what's transitory. And the gains that we're seeing early in 2021 are going to be dwarfed by the gains that we see in late 2021. So instead of inflation prices picking up and then coming back down, they're going to go up, and then they're going to go up even faster.
Mm.
So this is the beginning of an inflationary spiral, the likes of which no one in America has ever lived through, you know, including the people that were here during the 1970s, because what we're going to experience when it comes to inflation is going to be far worse than the 70s. And the bigger difference is we're not going to put a stop to it like they did in the 80s. Because we don't have a Paul Volcker who's going to raise interest rates up to 20%, because we don't have a country that can even afford to pay a rate, a fraction of that, because we are a shadow of what we were in 1980. In 1980, we were still running trade deficits, surpluses. We had huge trade surpluses. In 1980, America was still a creditor nation. Now we're the world's biggest debtor nation. So we're the mirror image of what we were, and so we can't afford to do the right thing today the way Reagan and Volcker did in 1980.
Yeah. Okay, so just a quick response Peter, to this then. So again, I think you and I agree on most things. I think that's pretty clear for anyone watching. But this point I'm going to come back to again, of the transitory inflation.
I can't see it in terms of what you're seeing right here. So I do think come 4 or 5 years out, okay, let me clarify this. I think we're going to see these constant printing, more QE, and I think the inflation is going to go through the roof. So we're in agreement. I agree with you. We're going to see massive price rises this year. We're already seeing it, even though people can't see it. So we're only in agreement there. But I think once they finish this printing, so let's say they do 3 years worth of it, and then they taper it right down. I still, unless you're seeing the fact that what we're talking about with the shipping containers, the US not producing things anymore, I still can't see why this would not be transitory. I can't see why it would continue on.
Well, first of all, remember, we still have a lag. So even if we stop printing money, I think the money that we printed in the years past, that's going to be working through the system for many, many years after we shut the presses down. So you have to realize that, you know, there's a lot of it built in that it's going to take time before it shows up. But the other thing is that I don't see that they're going to turn it down. I think they're going to step it up. I don't think that there is going to be a taper. See, well, here's what I actually think is going to happen. I think that the next recession that we have in America is going to be triggered by inflation. I think it's going to be rising prices that causes Americans to cut back on their spending, right? Even if they're spending more money, they're spending more money on less stuff,
I agree.
Right? Because they're just paying higher prices. And so if I'm spending more money on food, if I'm spending more money on energy, on insurance, on maintenance, on healthcare, on stuff like that, I have less money for discretionary spending. And that's where you're going to see big layoffs, right? A lot of businesses that make a living off discretionary spending, they're going to be going out of business. In addition, a lot of companies that are going to see big increases in their costs, they're going to try to offset that. And one way is going to be by reducing headcount.
Of course.
So I think you're going to see a pickup in unemployment and a recession that's actually caused by inflation. So now you have inflation going up, but you have a weak economy. Now, what is the Fed going to do? They have to make a choice, right? Do they want to try to stimulate the economy or fight inflation? Well, clearly they're going to go for stimulate the economy. So what they're going to be doing is effectively pouring gasoline on a fire. They're going to start printing more money even as inflation is accelerating. And so that is going to cause the stampede out of the dollar to accelerate as people start to see that the Fed is stepping on the gas, not the brakes, right, with inflation. And, you know, and the weaker the economy gets, the more money the Fed's going to print. The more money they print, the higher the inflation. The higher the inflation, the weaker the economy. So it becomes a self-perpetuating spiral. As inflation weakens the U.S. economy, the Fed prints more money to try to soften the blow or stimulate the economy, which makes the inflation problem worse, which hurts the economy even more. So there's just, I don't see how we get out of this. I mean, the way we got out of it the last time was because we did taper a bit. I mean, they shrunk the balance sheet from $3.5 trillion down to 2.8 or something like that. But they're not going to be able to shrink it from 10 or 15, wherever, to, you know, at all. And they were able to get interest rates from zero back up to 2. But nobody is going to be dumb enough to believe the Fed's lies again. I mean, I was warning that the Fed was lying the last time. People didn't believe me. But I think this time, they're more likely to believe people like me than the Fed, because who's going to believe that the Fed is ever going to be able to shrink this balance sheet if they couldn't shrink the smaller one, or they're ever going to normalize rates down? And in fact, I don't even think they're even going to try to bluff it. They're just going to assume or pretend that we can keep interest rates here forever. We can print all the money we want. And so I don't see the stop that you're looking for that's going to turn this off. You know, now, the only thing in my mind that may force the government to do the right thing would be a real dollar and sovereign debt crisis. you know, Argentina style. I mean, if we really start to see the dollar crashing, you know, going down 5-10% overnight, you know, acting like the peso, right, or something like that, right? We really see the dollar tanking. We start to see, like, the price of gold going up several hundred dollars, $500, maybe $1,000 in a day or, you know, a few.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
start to see a real crisis. We, you know, you can't give away U.S. Treasury bonds, right? The yield, you know, the, then maybe they'll have to, you know, do the right thing. But, I mean, the consequences there are going to be horrific of doing the right thing.
So
and the consequences of not doing the right thing are even more horrific.
Got it. So in terms of, let's say, I'm just trying to see what you're seeing that would cause that. So maybe the treasuries in China, so you got a trillion there, Japan's got a trillion, the UK's got half a trillion. Are you maybe alluding to maybe those countries dumping their treasuries? I mean, what are you seeing that's going to weaken the dollar so much, apart from what we've already discussed?
Well, remember, we have these record trade deficits, so we're flooding the world with dollars now that they don't need. And so the only reason the dollar isn't crashing is because people are investing those dollars in U.S. assets. But once they lose confidence in the future value of the dollar, then they won't want those assets. And so there's no buyers for dollars. And yes, I do think that the world is going to look to get out of not only U.S. treasuries, but all debt denominated in the U.S. currency.
Mm.
And remember, I think what the Fed is going to do is right now the Fed is monetizing government debt, right? Mortgages, government bonds. But as the world wants out of U.S. dollars, you're going to start to see those credit spreads really blowing out because you're going to see big increases in corporate yields, in municipal bonds. And I think the Fed is going to respond to that by expanding its QE program to include more municipal bonds and corporate bonds because it doesn't want corporate rates to go up. But the only way to stop them from going up is if the Fed becomes the lender and the buyer of these bonds. But in order to do that, they have to print even more money that nobody wants.
Yeah, that's the paradox.
So, you know, we backed ourselves into a corner. There is no way out of it but a dollar crisis. And that's not really a way out of it. That's just having to confront it as opposed to kicking the can down the road, which we've been doing. But because we've kicked the can down the road for so long, we have postponed having to deal with the underlying consequences, or not the consequences, the underlying problems of our economy, of our dysfunctional, misallocated bubble economy. And so all of those fundamental problems are bigger because it's been so long and we haven't had to, you know, restructure.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, let's get on to the what you're talking about with the interest rate rises. So I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, your opinion is the Fed aren't going to raise the interest rates because they will kill and destroy this recovery that they've created through QE and other things. But
right, it's not a recovery. Remember, it's a bubble. So they'll prick their own bubble by raising rates, and they don't want to prick the bubble.
Yeah, I'm talking about the recovery in terms of how the public is seeing it. I'm not talking from
right, right. The public thinks we're recovering, but the reality is we're sicker than ever. We haven't recovered from anything at all.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you see as the tipping point? What is the tipping point that Peter Schiff would change his mind on the Fed not raising interest rates? Is it 5% inflation, 10%, 20%, 50%? What is the tipping point in your mind?
Well, I said the tipping point is going to be a crisis where the political consequences of not acting may appear worse than the political consequences of acting. I mean, right now, nobody wants to raise interest rates and crash the stock market, crash the real estate market, just keep on printing money, everything is fine. But when we come to a point where everything is not fine because the dollar is collapsing and prices are surging, maybe the stock market is going down anyway, or, you know, because everything is so bad, they may feel that, okay, it's already horrible. We might as well, you know, do what we need to do because we're probably not going to get reelected anyway. but things are going to get really bad. But that is going to happen. I mean, so, you know, if you're worried that, well, we'll never fix our problems, you know, well, we will, because we're going to have no choice at one point.
Yeah.
But, that, you know, if we don't do the right thing, even though we really have no choice, then we have hyperinflation. You know, then we're Zimbabwe, right? And you know, that, of course, is the biggest possible disaster. I mean, I think at the end of this, the U.S. dollar is no longer going to be the reserve currency, regardless of what happens. The dollar is going to be just another currency. But we want to make sure that the dollar doesn't become nothing, right? I mean, the British pound used to be the reserve currency, right? It's not anymore, but it still has some value. So we don't want to destroy the dollar completely so that it's not even a viable currency. If we have hyperinflation, then that may be the outcome. But we have, in order to avoid hyperinflation, we're going to have to do the right thing. We're going to have to turn off the presses at some point. So the party is going to end. It's just a question of when and how.
Yeah. So that raises somewhat of a sort of oxymoron then, because if obviously you're very bullish on gold, so if you're not expecting asset prices, and correct me if I'm wrong with what you've just said there, to come down until interest rates go up, so stock market, real estate market, just looking at historical data then, in not all but most crises like this, when we've seen this sort of event going on, gold is historically tends to be down. And when the rates go up and when the markets start to come down, because look, we've got one pool of money, with the seven variables or eight variables to it, but we've got the stock market, real estate market, we've got metals, etc. So I'm just curious why you're so bullish on buying gold now. If you don't expect them to raise rates, wouldn't you wait until, you know, later on, once they're pulling everyone into the markets with real estate and stocks, and then you would just load up on gold? So can you just explain that?
Well, you know, I'm not just buying gold. I mean, I'm buying real assets all over the world. I want to get out of paper, and I want to own real businesses, real resources. I want companies that can pay me dividends and that can increase my dividends as my cost of living goes up. And so I'm not just, you know, putting everything in gold, but I'm not buying gold. And I'm also investing in mining stocks, which I think are extremely cheap as businesses right now. I think the fundamentals are fantastic. The valuations are historically low. These companies have great earnings. The earnings are growing. Their dividends are going up. There's not a lot of companies that are in such good financial positions and have such bright outlooks as the mining sector. Yet, you know, it's still very cheap. And so I want to be invested in this area. Look, you know, inflation, if you want to really boil it down and look at it, number one, it's a tax, right? It's the way a government taxes people without having to officially tax them. Instead of taking your money in a way that you can see it and you're annoyed about it, they just take your purchasing power by printing money. And so that means the money you have buys less stuff. And so the less stuff or the reduction in what you can buy is effectively a tax. The same way as, you know, I can buy less if the government takes my money. I can buy less if they take my purchasing power. But the other thing about inflation is it really represents a transfer of wealth from creditors to debtors, right? So people who are owed money suffer a loss because they're repaid with money that has less value than the money they loan. And it's a windfall for the borrower, the people who are in debt, because they get to repay their debts in money that has less value than the money that they originally borrowed, right? And the interest rates that they're paying don't adequately compensate the lender for the loss, because the interest rates were negotiated when everybody thought there wasn't going to be inflation. And so there wasn't a big inflation premium built into the rates. And so I want to own companies that have real assets that have debt, right? There's very few companies that have zero debt on their balance sheet. So if you own a corporation and that corporation has real assets and it's borrowed some money to accumulate those assets, if there's a lot of inflation, basically it ends up getting those assets almost for free.
Anyway, folks, I'll have to leave it there, but that was Peter Schiff being interviewed by Neil McCoy Ward on Neil McCoy Ward's YouTube channel. I'll be back next week, the 26th of April, same time, 4 p.m. Here in the UK. That's 10 p.m. Central Time, 11 p.m. Sorry, 10 a.m. Central Time and 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Again, do join us on Republic Broadcasting Network in an hour, live from 6 o'clock here in the UK, midday Central Time. And next week, E. Michael Jones on Republic Broadcasting Network next Monday, again, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Beyond the Official Narrative show with my co-host, or I'm the co-host, he's the host, sorry, Richard Carey. So that's next Monday the 26th, live here, and again at 6 o'clock with E. Michael Jones. Until then, folks, take care.